Welcome to this week's episode of Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined by my dear friend and co-host, Jacob Acquire. We've had some technical difficulties this afternoon, but hopefully we've smoothed past them. A lot to get into this week. We're going to be talking about the Panthers, kind of more insight on drafts or the draft process they had, and then we'll go into a couple of signings around the NFL before breaking down the AFC. How's your week been so far, Jacob?
Well, it was a decent start. You know, we had Cinco on Sunday, and that was nice. I got to hang out with some people. But then, like you said, technical difficulties for about an hour and a half here before the recording. So that's got me a little fired up, I guess. But hey, at least we can get to talk about football now like we were supposed to an hour ago. But yeah.
Yeah. So this week, similar to last week, Jacob is sticking to water. I'm doing the same Tennessee whiskey. We're still kind of on the fence of whether or not we're going to go back to beer, do a liquor, maybe just go sober. We'll figure that out in the coming weeks. But in the case of the Panthers, they have a game in Germany. Apparently, week 10 is when we're going to be there. Opponent is still not yet revealed. We signed Rashad Penny. He was with the Philadelphia Eagles last year. Drafted by Seattle when Dan Morgan and Canales were both on that team. What are your thoughts on those two things, or do you want to just kind of smooth on by and keep it pushing with Panther news?
So the Germany game I think is cool because we've done, I think, one London game, and this will be our first Germany game. I think the Germany game started in Tom Brady's last season, I believe. So that's cool to see there. I think it's going to be one of our worst opponents because it counts as a home game for us, and I'm sure Tepper and the fans kind of want to see teams like when Kansas City, we host Kansas City, so I'm sure they want to see Mahomes here or whatever other good teams we're hosting. They probably want them here. So the Germany game will probably be like the Giants or something, who knows. But the Rashad Penny signing I think is interesting. I thought, like, initially that it was like a camp body signing, kind of like Deion Jones was last year, but Jones stuck around and eventually made his way onto the roster. And I think that maybe if there's a team out there that needs a running back, Dallas Cowboys, that maybe they'd send like a seventh round pick or something, or a pick swap for Miles Sanders. So with the familiarity between Penny and the coaching staff and front office alignment, I could see him sticking around, maybe being on the practice squad or something like that. But you kind of alluded to it here in the next bullet point here. Canales is, he said he wants to show us how stubborn he can be with running the ball. And between drafting Jonathan Brooks, signing Penny, still have Chuba and Miles Sanders and Raheem Blackshear on the roster. And then even the practice squad last year had Spencer Brown, Tariq Cohen, had a cameo there for a couple weeks before he got injured. So there's going to be an emphasis on running the ball. And then you look at the two guards they signed who are excellent run blockers. So I'm excited to see how he's going to run the ball this season, or what concepts they're going to draw up with all these running backs they have on the roster so far.
Well, the issue was, and this was something we saw in Tampa Bay last year, it'd be first and second down runs, and then you're asking Baker to go convert potentially a third and long because they did not have a lot of success in the running game last year. Now, granted, the Buccaneers' offensive line was pretty questionable going into the year, and you wonder if the additions the Panthers made, if we're going to be able to open up lanes for some of these running backs. But just this investment into the running back room is kind of wild. Jason Fitzgerald on his podcast over the weekend broke down that he thought Jonathan Brooks, the trade up to grab him, was probably the second worst trade up in the entire draft this past year. We were trading up a lot of pieces that we got, could have probably stayed put at 52 and gotten a guy that would have been a difference maker day one and not had the move up for a non-premium position. So I know you and me kind of differ on this, Jacob, but it's one of those things that I don't think we actually gained a lot of value to begin with drafting Brooks, and then the fact that we doubled down by trading up. This was something we touched on last week, but the official numbers, they just kind of blow my mind in terms of just how much surplus we're kind of throwing out the window.
Yeah, I can understand the analytical side of it in that point of view. My thought is 2 years ago when the Panthers offense was successful, really for the first time in the Fitterer era, the Rule Fitterer era, it was running the ball, and they did it with a stout offensive line, which was Ike Ekwonu's strength. Remember, that was his rookie year. They did it without Christian McCaffrey, the best back in the league. It was with Deontay Foreman, who kind of got pieced out of the NFL last year by Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson and Chuba Hubbard, who was coming off of a really, really bad rookie year. So I can see the vision with wanting to run the ball. We even set records that year, or Panthers records, rather, running the ball under Steve Wilkes's when he was the interim head coach. But I can see the value. And the truth of the matter is, if Jonathan Brooks really is RB1 of this draft, if he's Bijan Light, which a lot of people were comparing him to coming into the draft, I don't think it really matters about the trade-up, because we sent, what, two future fifths, and fifth-round picks are – they're darts at the board, but they're fifth-round darts. Like, you're 20 feet back, and the dart is smaller and harder to hold, you know? So I'm not losing sleep over sending two fifth-round picks. But from a process standpoint, numbers, analytics, whatever you want to address it as, yeah, it's probably bad process. But as long as he is good and it works out, then nobody's going to care about what we sent to go get him.
Yeah, and if he pans out and he's a – but in order to pan out from a contract standpoint or a value standpoint, he's a guy that has to hit and be a top 10 running back. He can't just be like a top 15 guy that has some explosive plays here and there. He's got to be a true bell cow to warrant the investment that we made into him. And when you look down the draft board on the guys that we brought in, from Leggett to Brooks to Wallace to Sanders, even in the fourth, which I thought was one of the better value picks, to even some of our day three – The positional value offered, because the only premium position we took were Xavier Leggett and Jaden Crumpity.
We had a corner in round five as well.
It's a fringe one just because of hit rates in the NFL. But yes, you could argue Smith Wade was a guy that was a premium position. But outside of those, we weren't really throwing darts at the board at positions that matter or could offer substantial value in terms of surplus value. So the difference between weighted position surplus, which accounts for reaches in the draft, positional value, and then just the blind surplus, which is the expected contract value on that second contract and the surplus they offer there. The difference between those, all of those were negative for our picks. And that is worrisome. This is very, I wouldn't say Scott Fitterer-esque, but it's one of those things where we aren't using our resources as effectively as we could.
I think when you look at it from a macro, like take 10 steps back from a process hypothetical standpoint, I agree with you. The problem is with I don't want to say real world example, because that's what data and your project, which mentions, you should shout yourself out for with the blind surplus and everything, that all comes from real world draft, like post-draft analysis and stuff like that. But it's the Dan Morgan and the front office and the coaching staff's job to rebuild the team. And if on their board, that's like certain people in different groups, like in rounds 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, if that's the highest person in that little group that they took, then so be it. I think they're not going to lose sleep over Smith Wade, for example, versus if there was a tackle there, or if there was an edge rusher there or something like that. I think that all the picks, you can talk yourself into making sense. Special teams value for a lot of them, linebacker and D-line depth, which was very weak for us to begin with, especially with losing people like Frankie Louvu in free agency. And then on the offensive side of the ball, weapons for Bryce that I think may not have a superstar impact immediately, but all three of the offensive players that we drafted should be getting not force-fed looks and targets, but I think there's substantial athletic upgrades to the people on this roster. So they're going to have the opportunity to do positive things for the offense. So I think you can talk yourself into it from a like actual player perspective, but from, again, a process perspective regarding premium positions and things like that, I agree with you. This is still a draft where we needed to, or not needed to, but could have added to the edge rusher room, which is a premium position on defense, didn't really do that. Could have added a corner earlier, didn't really do that. So I can see both sides of the argument.
Yeah, and even adding another wide receiver, look at what the Packers did. And from these numbers I'm throwing out, the Packers were the worst in the NFL. So Dan Morgan ranked 28th in the NFL in difference between weighted position surplus and blind surplus. And Brian Gutekunst, who I'm about to praise, he ranked 32nd. But what he's done over the past two drafts is he has taken so many premium positions. He took The two wide receivers in Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. And then this past year, Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks. And then even this year, even though he went a lot of non-premium positions in day two and day three picks, in round one, he takes Jordan Morgan. And he took Zach Tom a couple years ago. It's just this mindset of you always want to be replenishing for the future because you never know what's going to happen. A lot of these guys that are on your roster, you lose almost 50% of them over 2 years. Like, that's how much the turnover is in the NFL. So always thinking ahead, always planning ahead, and trying to fill the needs that are going to be most expensive should be the priority. And that's really the point here. But as we go around the NFL, something that I don't think is necessarily as sharp or smart, the Chiefs extended yet another big star of theirs that is aging and I would argue is on the decline. So Chris Jones got a massive contract, very similar to Aaron Donald's. We're going to see the cap implications now that Aaron Donald has retired. And I think that will impact them for the next year or two. But the way they've handled some of their dead cap situation over the past year, I'm not worried about the Rams, but the Chiefs, you sign Chris Jones and now you extend Travis Kelce to a $34.25 million 2 year extension. On top of, I think he had what, 1 year left on his contract, 2 years left. And I get you're trying to make your players happy. I get you're coming off winning two Super Bowls, but these are the kind of mistakes that lead you down a path to where you aren't going to make it back to the Super Bowl. Or if you do this next year, that it's going to be even harder the year after. I don't know what your take is on that. I just wasn't a...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Big fan of this extension.
Yeah, it really reminds me of the Rams a couple years ago. They won the Super Bowl on we'll say a questionable fourth down play with Cooper Kupp there. But they won the Super Bowl. They signed Stafford to a longer deal. They signed Cooper Kupp to a longer deal. And they signed Aaron Donald to a longer deal. Donald probably deserved it. Was probably the best defender in the league. But now he's retired. And I think this upcoming year, his numbers will still be on the books. Cooper Kupp, following the Super Bowl, injured for a good chunk of it. He played a decent amount last year, but was still coming back from the injury. I think he played 9 or 10 games. But I think they lucked out getting Puka Nacua to share that space with, and Stafford also after the Super Bowl injured. And now you look at the Chiefs, restructured Mahomes. I don't want to say it's an extension because I think he's still on the books for like 8 or 9 years with that mega deal. So he's like the Stafford comparison. Travis Kelce is like the Cup comparison. Kelsey's been best tight end in the league for quite a while, but he's getting up there in age. He was like declining
in right now.
Right. And if Taylor Swift wasn't at the games last year, he wasn't at his best. And then Chris Jones, same position as Aaron Donald. You could probably say he's the best interior guy in the league now that Donald is gone. Maybe even one of the best defenders. I'd still probably take Myles Garrett and Parsons over him, but still one of the better ones there. So you can see the similarities between the two. I'm not a fan of this either. I thought he was getting on the decline. I thought they could have replaced him this year with like high draft capital. We'll talk about that when we get to the AFC West. But yeah, I'm not a fan of this here. I know you're trying to make him happy, but this seems like at the end of this contract, he's done. And so I don't know if making him the highest paid tight end in the league is necessarily worth it. But if Mahomes is as good as he is, and we've seen the kind of, I don't want to say putrid, but pretty bad receiving corps he's had the last two seasons, which resulted in Super Bowl wins, I guess they can afford it, especially with them getting a guy in round one this year.
Yeah, it just shows you how much surplus Mahomes is providing. The reason why he's considered the greatest quarterback right now in the NFL, and even with his contract, that there are very few rookie quarterbacks that you would take above him, which is crazy to think. Like, you might be able to at the end of this year, say like a guy like Drake May has the ability in terms of value on a rookie contract of competing with Mahomes in terms of value, but it's so hard. And it's the reason why the Chiefs have been in the Super Bowl the past 2 years. Now, a couple other signings, two wide receiver signings that were notable. The Titans signed Tyler Boyd to a one-year contract, adding to the ranks of DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. So a bunch of older wide receivers. Do you think that's going to kind of help propel Will Levis and see if they can truly evaluate him? Or do you think this room is kind of gassed and not going to provide the juice that their name value is?
Man, this receiver room would have been disgusting like 3 or 4 years ago, but I think they're all maybe a little bit past their prime, but I think this is a good enough group to evaluate Will Levis. Last year, obviously not great, you know, but DeAndre Hopkins still showed that he has some stuff left in the tank. Ridley had a pretty a pretty good year after not playing football for nearly 2 years, or organized football, that is. And Tyler Boyd stepped up a lot when Chase and Higgins both missed time this past year with the Bengals. And he reunites with his former offensive coordinator and Brian Callahan, who's now the head coach of the Bengals, or of the Titans, excuse me. So I kind of like that there. And then Miami signed OBJ. I saw, I think it was Schefter put out the tweet. It was like, they signed Speedster Odell Beckham to a 1 year down. I'm like, Speedster, are we back in 2015? But no, I think he'll be a good like complement to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill there. I thought he made the most of his opportunity when he had it with the Ravens last year. I think he had around 700 yards, and I thought it was decent at least. So at worst, he'll be like a mid wide receiver three, which is exactly what the Dolphins needed outside of their two superstar receivers. So I like that one there.
No, I think it's a good pairing where we talk about like Tyler Boyd going to the Titans and it's already an old room. Tyreek Hill is definitely a little bit older. He's still showing that he can produce at an extremely high level. Odell Beckham, as long as he can stay healthy, he's a guy that does provide juice. He's a reliable pass catcher, somebody that's going to be able to provide a security blanket for Tua, which will be helpful because there's a lot of these concepts where you need to either give one of your two star wide receivers a breather, or you do need to get out an 11 personnel and have a couple mismatches. And I think OBJ provides that at this point in his career. It's kind of like you said, that mid wide receiver three role. So without further ado, we're going to jump into our reactions throughout the AFC. We'll start with the AFC North, the best division in football last year. I think they're still going to be one of the better ones this year. I don't know if they're going to be the best. But with the Ravens, do you think they did enough to replenish their offensive line? They trade Morgan Moses. Ronnie Stanley's hurt usually most of the time, so his availability isn't always great. And then they even lost Kevin Zeitler, who is now with the Lions on a one-year deal. So with drafting Rosengarten in the second and Samak in the seventh, is that enough? Or do you think that they're going to be able to scheme around younger and more inexperienced guys at those positions?
Well, I'm never going to doubt the whoever the Baltimore's O-line coach is, because they seem to be like their O-linemen get destroyed every year. And they're still not among like the five worst O-lines in the league. So I'll always have faith in them there. Roger Rosengarten, I thought, was a little rich at 62, but I had heard prior to the draft that there were considerations of him going even higher, like in the first round. Like San Francisco was very big on him from what I heard. So I guess that's fair value in accordance with the league. My main thing with them is I was not a huge Nate Wiggins super fan coming into the draft. Like I think he has excellent ball skills. I think he's super athletic, but it's just his measurables size wise are just very, very bad. Really slight frame, really, really short arms, like 10th percentile arms. So I think that was probably rich there. But then they doubled down and got TJ Tampa a lot later, I think at 130. And he fell because, again, athletically, he was a bit on the slower side, but I think those two can complement each other. I thought Adisa Isaac was a good grab as well, the edge rusher. They always get like a toolsy edge rusher like that, so I like that. The one that you didn't like, and you had a lot to say about Tez Walker before the draft, but how do you think he fits in there with that wide receiver room?
I mean, you joked, and I mean, Zay Flowers had a couple bad drops. Bateman's not known for his hands. It seems like they add guys at the wide receiver position that have certain physical attributes, and this would have to be tested. But they hit certain threshold, and they don't care about watching the film and seeing that these guys struggle to catch the ball. And why I personally think Zay Flowers has great hands, it's one of those things that when you're adding all these pass catchers around Lamar, and some of them can't catch the ball, then it doesn't matter how good the play is designed, drawn up, Lamar throws the ball, et cetera, et cetera, if the wide receiver can't haul it in. So that is the worrisome aspects for me when I look at Tez Walker. He was drafted later in the draft. I'm not as worried about it as like a Quentin Johnston in the first round last year by the Chargers. But it was one of those picks where I was like, really? You could have probably gone a different direction. But like you said, Nate Wiggins, a little undersized. I think he's a great football player. I was at the college level. And so if he gets to play with Marlon Humphrey and Kyle Hamilton and some of these guys that are already bigger, then he may not have to get mismatched to where he's like covering like a AJ Brown, like you saw last year with Emmanuel Forbes in Washington. So one of those situations where I think he's going to be put in a situation where he's going to thrive, and it's not going to be so much an exposure of his limitations. And the same thing with TJ Tampa. I think he can play outside, be allowed to be rangy in a zone heavy scheme, and execute that. So overall, I like this draft from Eric DaCosta. He does pretty well in terms of drafting. It's not like he gains a lot of surplus. And there's none of these picks here that I look at and go, wow, that was like a home run hit. It's just, it's solid across the board. And did they do enough to replenish kind of the holes they lost in free agency?
Yeah, he's no Ozzie Newsome, but I think he's done a pretty good job there during his first. He's been the GM, what, like 4 or 5 years now? Yeah. So I think he's done a decent job there. Cincinnati in the same division as a draft I really liked. They started with Amarius Mims, who we both predicted they would pre-draft the big tackle to learn behind the other two big tackles they have. They got Chris Jenkins from Michigan in the second round, some interior D-line depth, and then got Jermaine Burton, the Alabama former Georgia wide receiver, at pick 80, who is extremely talented. I think he just needs to have his head square on his shoulders for most of the time. But I think with the loss of Tyler Boyd and perhaps the subsequent loss of T. Higgins next year, I thought that was a really good pick, even considering the two guys that they drafted last year. And I was a big fan of both of them, Andre Yoshivas and Charlie Jones. I think the replenishment or replenishing of the positions that they're losing, I think the Bengals are one of the best at drafting a year early for that. We talked about that the last offseason, how they did that with their secondary players and their Miles Murphy pick as well. I think they're doing that again this year, especially with Trent Brown being on a one-year deal. Mims can fit right in next year.
Yeah, no, I think it's perfect in terms of like when you talk about like a drafting philosophy. Duke Tobin is really good about drafting for future needs. And we see that with Amarius Mims. We see that with Jermaine Burton. And it's just so strategic. This is how you know a front office is a good front office and knows how to kind of plan for the future. Love the Chris Jenkins pick. It fills an immediate need. McKinley Jackson was also, I think it was a nose tackle they drafted at 97. And that helps replace some of the star power they had with DJ Reader, who went to Detroit this past year in the free agency, and helps with kind of bolstering they did in free agency with BJ Hill and Sheldon Rankin. So they went about kind of rebuilding a need in the draft and through free agency, and then they were able to address future needs through the draft. So I thought this was one of the better drafts in the league. It creates a probably arguably one of the better wide receiver trios if Jamar Chase, Higgins, and Burton are on the field. So I like it from top to bottom. Think they did a smart went about it in a smart way of allocating their resources. So a team that did not have as many resources in the draft, but I thought also had good process and drafted a few good prospects with the Cleveland Browns. So they had two top 100 picks. They didn't pick until 54 in this year's draft due to the Deshaun Watson trade. And they took Michael Hall out of Ohio State. And he was in your top five with edge rushers, and he has a high motor and I think will produce next to Myles Garrett. What do you think?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Yeah, for interior defensive guy, Michael Hall. Yeah, he's in my top five. Yeah, I really like him there. I thought he was really, really underrated at Ohio State this year. A lot of the Ohio State seniors went back this year. I guess they're all ring chasing at Ohio State this year. But I think you're going to notice him not being along that D line. I think he was a big reason why guys like Jack Sawyer, JTT, like their famous edge rusher, were really able to get one-on-one looks. And I think he's going to fit right in with that defensive line that they still have Za'Darius Smith, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's going to complement everybody really well. And then they got Zach Zenter, the guard from Michigan, who he had an injury that ended his season prematurely. But I believe going into the season, he was a preseason All-American, just really strong guard there. And so they bolstered both sides of the line. And I think for what they had, which wasn't a lot because, like you said, the Watson trade, I think they did a fairly decent job. They also got Jamari Thrash, the Louisville speedster, in day three. So that's another flyer that they can take there, maybe to be their receiver three or something like that. But I think now that I think this is right, next year I don't think they owe any picks to anyone. I think they're going to be better off like going forward with that as opposed to they are now, because Watson is really the key now. He has to step up. He was not very good last year. Kevin Stefanski won coach of the year with Joe Flacco coming off the couch. So Watson really needs to step up in order for them to be competitive, because they were, what, 10-7, 11-6 with Flacco for 6 or 7 games, PJ Walker for a couple games. And I don't want to say that they played particularly well. So it's just at this point, the roster's good on paper and everything, but I got to keep harping on it. Watson's got to play better to make that trade worth it. To me, it already wasn't worth it, but with the investment and everything they've had to get, he has to play better. And I think these picks were a good start to that.
Yeah. And like Watson just has not regained any of his form that he had in Houston, because if he had some of those explosive plays, he had that deep ball in his arsenal, I feel like this wide receiving core would be unlocked. I mean, we're talking about a wide receiving core, and I know you said Thrash would be playing for that wide receiver three role.
I forgot.
Yeah, Cooper, Elijah Moore, they just traded for
Judy.
Exactly, Jerry Jeudy from Denver. And it's just they keep surrounding Deshaun Watson with playmakers to where there really is no excuse. And so we'll see if that's the case. They should be one of the better teams at 11 personnel. We talk about like kind of wide receiver trios that are really good. This one's one of those sneaky good ones that I think could be top 10 this year that nobody's really talking about right now. And it's just because they're just sound, fundamental dudes that can separate and get open. And that's what matters at the NFL. So with that in mind, we have the Steelers. And this was a draft that I was pretty high on. Omar Khan has made the O-line a priority over the past 3 off seasons with the Steelers. A couple years back, he added a couple guys in free agency. Last year, he drafts Broderick Jones out of Georgia in the first round, signs Isaac Samula from the Philadelphia Eagles. This year, drafts Troy Fontenot in the first, Zach Frazier in the second, and Mason McCormick on day 3. Those guys will help pave the way for Najee Harris, Jaylen Warren, allow you to be more run heavy and mitigate kind of the chaos that Justin Fields and Russell Wilson bring, and in essence, make it just more constructive and also in structure. Because when those guys have more in the tank for gas and they aren't always running around, then they can make more of those splash highlight plays and make the big play rather than getting sacked or throwing a bad ball or throwing an interception. So I like where the Steelers are heading in this direction. They still do have a gaping hole at wide receiver, and that's definitely a big question.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said the Browns might be a sneaky top 10 receiver unit. I think the Steelers are not going to be a top 10 receiver unit anytime soon until they bring in multiple playmakers. They did add Roman Wilson, who I like as like an intermediate guy, but I don't think he's a big difference maker. He was obviously the number one guy at Michigan this past year, but I'm curious to see how he's going to fit in with the, I want to say the receivers, but it's really just Pickens there with the rest of them. And Pickens is definitely going to be the number one guy. He's got an alpha personality and stuff like that. So I think that Wilson's a good pairing there. They also added Peyton Wilson, the NC State linebacker who fell in the draft due to his medicals. He's had double-digit surgeries in his football career dating back to high school and college. But I think if the medicals check out and like he can get on the field for the majority of his time there, I thought that was a steal. But the main thing to me is the O-line. You talked about it. I think they drafted 3 starters, and I'm not sure that McCormick will start because their O-line isn't, like, I don't think it's really bad. But Frazier and Fontenot definitely should start. I think with the pairing of, like you said, Sam Malu in free agency last year, Broderick Jones in round one last year, their O-line should be the steel curtain on offense. And I think it's going to make it easy for Arthur Smith as the play caller. It's just up to now, can Fields or Wilson make the plays that they need to make? And I'm not so sure. But I'm rooting for Justin Fields to do well there because I'm a big Fields fan.
Well, when we've seen the quarterback play in Atlanta, a lot of those play action plays with Mariota or Ritter last year, it was like they couldn't hit the like broadside of a barn. And we've seen like Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, like they may not be the best processors in the game or be able to just dominate from within the pocket. But they have the ability that when they're on the rollout to be able to deliver an accurate ball on the move. And that's sometimes what you need in some of these play action heavy offenses. And I think they're loading up with Darnell Washington and Pat Freiermuth to run a lot of 12 personnel this year with Arthur Smith. So we'll see how that all plays out. They're going to definitely be run heavy. And when your day one starters at wide receiver are probably going to be George Pickens, Van Jefferson, and Roman Wilson, like you said, they're probably going to be close to the 32 in wide receiver trios than they are a top 10. And that's just the state of that wide receiver room as they go about kind of rebuilding the team over the next couple of years.
Yeah, they're on Luther Burden watch next year, the Missouri wide receiver. Never too early to get your 2025 draft information in, so I had to get that one there. But if I had to pick a draft out of this group that I like the most, it's pretty difficult because I'm a fan of three of the even Baltimore's draft I'm a fan of, but I think I would go with Cincinnati. I just think they're the best at drafting a year or two ahead, and I think they're doing it again this year. What about you?
I would agree that I enjoy the Bengals draft the most. I think what the Steelers are doing, though, especially with rebuilding the offensive line and just knowing how Mike Tomlin can coach a team, I feel like they're going to be really scrappy because of just how good they are already on the defensive side. And like you said, they added Peyton Wilson. So if Peyton Wilson is healthy and he's roaming around there, especially with the guys they have on the defensive line and some of the pieces they've added in the secondary with Joey Porter and Minkah Fitzpatrick, it's just – That's a lot too. So this is going to be a fun division this fall, but overall, I think the Bengals had the better draft. Moving on into the AFC East, we'll kind of start with the Bills. They're probably the team we're going to talk about the least here in this division, just because like the draft wasn't sexy. Bean went in there with limited resources. He made the most out of it, trading back twice in the first, the last one being with us and trading out of the first. Still got their wide receiver and Keon Coleman. He's a funny dude. If you guys have seen any of the interviews he's had or different video clips of being with the team or some of the interviews, he's a cool dude. I can understand why they want him in the locker room. I think with Josh Allen and his skill set, he knows he can put the ball in certain places. And sometimes it's just having a guy that can win those 50-50 jump balls, especially when you have a guy like Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid that are better separators or able to utilize their route running a little bit better at this point in their career. So we'll see how that works out. Like the Cole Bishop selection out of Utah, especially when they had a huge glaring need at safety, they'll probably sign one of these free agent safeties as well to kind of just bolster that back end. What did you think about this draft? Pretty meh overall. That's kind of the takeaway I have from it.
Yeah. Pretty mid overall. Like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of Coleman, coming into the draft. I think he was 37th on my board overall. So still a good player. I think he's going to be an upgrade over Gabe Davis in the fact that he should catch all the balls that Davis just like let sail past him or hit him in the chest and didn't even put his hands up. Coleman's going to get those. He has a basketball background. He's going to box out and stuff like that. But I think the difference between the two is Davis could outrun a lot of receivers. I thought he was a better route runner as well. And we'll have to see how Coleman can create separation at the next level. But yeah, just kind of a boring draft to me. I like the Dwayne Carter addition because they seem to have the defensive tackle from Duke because they seem to always have injuries there. So he'll be strong there. My thing as well, I see they drafted two. They draft Cole Bishop, the safety, and Daquan Hardy I liked as well.
Yeah, no, that was a good slot.
Like a flex nickel, I think. I think they did need to add a bit more in the secondary just because their secondary always seems to be just crushed with injury throughout the season. But overall, yeah, kind of mid. And, we're going to talk about the other three teams a lot more because I think they all took interesting approaches. All took different approaches, but all of them are interesting.
Yeah, and we'll start with the Dolphins. I think you and me have the biggest disagreement here. When we did our mock drafts, I had them taking an edge rusher there. I believe it was Jared Verse. It may have been someone else, but it was definitely an edge rusher. They end up drafting Chop Robinson. Andrew Van Ginkle, he leaves in free agency. Christian Wilkins leaves in free agency. And you have Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips coming off season-ending injuries. In the case of Jalen Phillips, it was an Achilles tear. In the case of Chubb, it was an ACL tear. So this is a room that I think I have a lot of questions about. I understand the concerns on the offensive line, but we saw what Mike McDaniel did to mask those offensive line issues with just a quick passing game, outside runs, and just knew how to mitigate those offensive line concerns. And to me, I think he saw and looked at the defense and said, hey, we need to be able to get after the quarterback or else it's just going to be a long day each and every week on Sunday this fall. So that's the philosophy I saw there. I knew you weren't super high on Chop Robinson coming into the draft, and you thought most of the other first rounders, aside from maybe Darius Robinson, who you still had graded higher than Chop, to be better picks than Chop.
Yeah, for the Dolphins, for sure. I understand your points about the injury concern with both Phillips and Chubb, but I look at it from kind of a different perspective. They just gave Chubb, I think, two off seasons ago, a pretty big deal. They're going to have to pay Jalen Phillips soon. They picked up his fifth year. He was excellent for them last season, so he's going to get a closer to top market deal. They signed Shaq Barrett in the offseason, who isn't his former self. Like, he wasn't his Super Bowl winning self. Either Super Bowl winning self, geez, that he's been the past couple of years. But I think he provides good depth there. And you look at that O-line, he was good at masking deficiencies, but they lose probably their second best person or player in Robert Hunt to us. They still have Armstead there and everything. But I don't know. For a team that is all in, like I believe they're still pretty high on the all-in index in terms of current and future spending. I don't know if Chop Robinson would have been the pick there for me. Like I like you said, I would have preferred any number of the receivers that went after him, any of the DBs that went after him. But he's on the team now. Hopefully he balls out with them. I think he'll be a good rotation piece, but I just can't see him having a ton of production year one. And for a guy that you're – it's the 21st overall pick, a top 21 pick for a team that's going to be contending, or at least I expect them to contend – I think you want more than like rotation production, but we'll see there. I did find it funny that they added more speedsters to the team as well. The Jalen Wright selection, the Tennessee running back, I thought was interesting to say the least, because they gave up a future third, I believe, to move up and get him. Horrible process there, especially when they re-sign Raheem Mostert this offseason, who's 31 years old. And they had Devon Achane, who was on a per-carry basis, probably the best running back we've ever seen in the league last year, even though it was limited numbers. And they still have guys like Jeff Wilson, who's been a good rotation guy throughout his career. So not a fan of that one. They did add Malik Washington, though. I think they got value there. The one I really like, or the pick that I really like for them, is Patrick Paul, the Houston tackle that they got. I think he's going to be a good backup to Armstead. And Armstead only plays like 8 games a season nowadays anyway. So I think that was good, getting some depth along the offensive line there. But I think they needed to get more earlier than what they got.
Yeah. I think from a team building philosophy, Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel are on the same page in terms of they want wide receivers. They want edge players. I mean, like McDaniel's first year, they trade for Chubb. They trade for Tyreek Hill. They have all this draft capital and they immediately go after those guys. In the draft process, yes, you're absolutely right. They grab Achane last year. They've already had Mostert on the roster for the next couple years. They signed him to, I think, a 2-year extension this past year. He's on the books for another 2 years for less than $5 million. So it's nothing nothing crazy. Actually, no, I take that back. His APY is about $4 million, so a little under five. Then you add another fourth-round guy. And I think the biggest thing is that they had injuries at the running back position. They've had injuries at the edge position. And they wanted to add some more depth at wide receiver. So they add Malik Washington. So it's all this process of, these are the positions we value. We can deal with just subpar average players that we're just grabbing off the streets rather than allocating draft resources or trading or spending top dollar for these guys. So I think it's just how they are going about building the team. I think it will come back to bite them because we've seen that come January that they can't block, they can't run the ball effectively, and all of a sudden they're stopped on offense, and it's not the high flying Miami Dolphins experience that we've had in the September and October's of the football season. So I think that's where it's going to get stymied, and McDaniel's going to have to pivot next year to kind of correct. So a draft that I thought was the best in the division is the New England Patriots. They grabbed the best quarterback at number 3, didn't have to trade up to get him. Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, I thought, were excellent wide receivers to add to that room that'll pair nicely with each other and be go-to guys for Drake May in the coming years. Caden Wallace, Laydon Robinson, they add the bolster the O-line. And then on day 3, Joe Milton and Jaheim Bell, I think those are solid day 3 pieces. You get a backup quarterback that can just sling it, and you have a tight end that's got a lot of good physical traits that could develop into a go-to guy in this offense next to Hunter Henry.
Yeah, this might be my favorite draft in the whole league this year. I'm big on Drake May. I like the pick there. I'm glad they didn't trade out of it, even though I think we both predicted that they might. They stuck with their guns and took Drake May. Good choice there. Two receivers that I think can start immediately on their roster in Polk and Baker. Good O-line reinforcements in Wallace and Rob. I'm pretty big on Robinson as well. Their O-line and their receiver rooms were horrible last year. It was a horrible situation for both Mac Jones and Zappe there. So good to see that they bolstered that. They did get Joe Milton, so another QB to bring in. I was seeing memes like, is he going to Kirk Cousins, Drake May, or anything like that? But not so sure there. But it's always good to have a strong arm QB, even if he's just on the practice squad or something like that. Like, he could be a good scout team guy. Jaheim Bell, the Florida State tight end, he's interesting to me because he's a bit of a tweener. I think he's going to end up as a fullback in the league. But when I think of fullbacks, team-wise, obviously, like, Juszczyk's the big one. But I always thought of the Patriots as being a team with big blockers coming out of the backfield for their running backs to follow. Like, what's his name? Jakob Johnson back in the later Tom Brady years. So I like that one there. So overall, I'm a big fan of this draft. Do I expect the Pats to win more than like 5 games this year? Probably not, because they're still young, reforming the post-Brady and now post-Belichick Patriots. But I really like the start that they had this season.
Yeah, no. And speaking of which, the Tom Brady roast was excellent. A lot of great roasts on the legend, the GOAT, Tom Brady. Some appearances from Randy Moss, Bill Belichick, and then some other people that are famous in the media. Moving on to the Jets, and you want to talk about jokes and roasts, I think the Jets are lining themselves up for a pretty bad one. We talked about how they've added a lot of guys that are injury prone. I thought they had good process initially in the draft. They traded back from 10 to 11, still got their guy in Fashanu, but trading up for Corley, taking another running back in Braylon Allen, especially when you already have Breece Hall, and then two corners on day 3 when the secondary is probably one of their biggest strengths, it just seemed like the draft allocation was subpar and really doesn't, I think, put them over the top to truly make a run this year. But that's just me. That's just me.
Yeah, this is a classic Joe Douglas draft, in my opinion. I'm not a big Joe Douglas fan. I think he's very overrated as a general manager. And despite the Olufoshanu pick, I like that one. I think he was a top 5 player for me. Really fit there. I think I had them taking Odunze or something in my prediction, but I'm glad they went O-line because they need the O-line reinforcement if Rodgers wants to stay upright. But it is that MetLife turf, so you never know. They trade up for Malachi Corley. You could see in their their behind-the-scenes war room thing that they were trying to trade up like for an hour to try and get Malachi Corley and finally settled with us. I like the trade that we got from them. They draft 2 running backs after having Breece Hall. They drafted Bam Knight three drafts ago now, NC State. He's not on the team anymore, but they drafted Isaiah Banacanda last year from Pitt. Now they add a 3rd and 4th running back in the draft on top of Breece Hall. Not sure what's going on there. Like, I'm a fan of always drafting a running back every year, but not in the 2nd or 3rd rounds like they have been doing. Like, do it in round 4 and keep the rotation going. that doesn't seem to be what they're doing. I just think that they're just taking guys to take guys.
We took Braylon Allen at 134. So to be fair, that was kind of where you would want it to be. But
yes, but they take Breece Hall at 34. Mm-hmm. They take the – no, it was the same draft as that. They took the NC State guy. Then they take the Pitt guy last year. Now this I don't know what's going on there. And then, yeah, the two defensive back pieces I actually think are interesting. Quantes Stiggers, he played in the CFL, the Canadian Football League. I think he was undrafted coming out of college. He was, I think, Defensive Player of the Year in the Canadian Football League this year. So intrigued to see what he can do there. And then Jalen Key, the Alabama kind of nickel safety player, interested to see what he can do. It's Nick Saban's first ever Mr. Irrelevant, so that was pretty cool. But just an iffy draft for me. Like, I like Fashanu. I like Corley for that offense because he can be the gadget player that he was in college. But everything else, not really. And yeah, the Jordan Davis one is funny to me just because the injury implication behind Rodgers. Hopefully he stays healthy. Or Jordan Travis, not Jordan Davis. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be a long-term backup either. I was not a fan of Travis in college.
I wasn't a fan of Dak Prescott necessarily coming out of Mississippi State, and this is me just throwing this out here. I don't think this is going to be the reality of the situation, but you had Romo and Dallas coming off several injuries, and what happens? They draft a fourth-round quarterback, Romo gets hurt again, and then he takes off behind a great offensive line, great supporting cast. And if everybody stays healthy on the Jets offense, there's a chance that you're absolutely right that Jordan Travis out of FSU maybe sees the field. I don't know. But maybe he's good. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I didn't like the film that I saw from him, but it's one of those things that sometimes you can't always predict how a guy is going to be able to transcend and what he's going to learn from Rodgers and the Jets offense this offseason. So we'll see about that. But it was just something I thought was interesting given the history that Dak Prescott and how he came about.
Dak had Mississippi State as the number one team for a couple weeks. He was very good in college. So I see like where they were drafted maybe is a similarity, but skill set and I think overall the talent, player,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't see similarity there at all in that regard, but I think we can both agree New England was the best draft out of these four, just like out from an immediate reaction. Obviously they still have to take the field and everything this year, but I think we both like New England the best out of this division.
Okay. Well, we are halfway through. We've gone through eight teams left to go. And we're going to start with the Houston Texans in the AFC South. They had an emphasis of kind of rebuilding the secondary, very similar to what the Lions did this past year. They took Lassiter with their first pick at 42, Kalen Bullock at 78. And the hit rate for cornerbacks in the top 100 picks is less than 15% since 2016. So this definitely does worry me. I don't think these are guys that like scream off the page. There were a lot of issues, I think, with Lassiter's game coming out. And so I thought 42 is a little rich for him. But obviously he was higher on a lot of other people's boards, so I don't want to take that away. They have a lot of investments already in premium positions. But again, when we talk about roster turnover being about every 2 years and Diggs is really on a one-year contract, you still got to extend Nico Collins. Tank Dell's health may be still kind of up in the air if he's not able to come back 100%. So them not doubling down at premium positions, I think, worries me here in terms of process.
I'm on the other side of the argument. I kind of like what they did. You said that the hit rate was pretty low on DBs within the first 100 picks. I would assume it's pretty similar after pick 100. Yeah. And probably even lower just because of the talent pool. So you have to get DBs at some point. And I'm not going to fault them for taking Lassiter, who was 44 on my board at 42. I was a bit lower on Bullock, though. The one that I'm not a huge fan of, or I don't really understand, was the Blake Fisher pick, the Notre Dame right tackle. On our lads, he's slated to start. I'm not sure if that's going to play out this season, but I just didn't see what a lot of people saw in his tape. I thought he was pretty slow. Like a slow mover, slow feet as well. So we'll see there. But overall, I think Houston was a very good team already. And I think they just supplemented things that they needed to in this draft. And so it's a good draft for me. Like again, the only ones I think that are going to see immediate time are Lassiter, Blake Fisher, and maybe Cade Stover at tight end, but they just re-signed Dalton Schultz. Their receiver room, like you talked about, after Collins Diggs tanked out, they have Noah Brown, who was good last year when he saw the field. He had like a crazy game in that game against the Buccaneers, if I recall correctly. John Mechie, who's healthy now. Robert Woods is like a backup for them, and he's still kicking around. And then they have some guys that they drafted more recently behind that. So I think their depth is fine across the board. It's just going to be on these young players to step up and take the next step, I think. But if it's anything like we saw last year, I think their trajectory is only forward. It's just going to be if they're going to be able to compete with the big guns in the AFC.
This is true. Yeah, it's going to come down to that. And just to touch on before we move on to, I think, more exciting drafts in the division, Blake Fisher, he was a massive reach. Juice Scruggs last year, the center for
That's
them.
That's true.
Massive reach as well. So whatever the Texans, their O-line evaluations are different than from consensus. Whether that works out for them, they already have Laremy Tunsil. They prioritized the offensive line last year with even trading for a few guys, sending day three picks for kind of proven commodities. So they're going about, I think, the team building process pretty decently. My thing is this was a wide receiver heavy class, and they should have taken a stab at that just because Diggs is on a 1-year deal. And you don't know necessarily what you're getting with them. We've seen Julio Jones traded for a second. We've seen Antonio Brown traded for a third and them not pan out where they went. And that's kind of my big concern is there was no, okay, let's still double down and make sure that we're giving CJ Stroud the best opportunity here, because I think over the next couple of years, these are their best chances to make a run at the Super Bowl and kind of do what Joe Burrow and the Bengals did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think this draft class is going to have to contribute as much immediately, so I guess that's why I'm a bit higher. But you talk about exciting classes. Look at Indy, who we have next. They get Leetu Latu at pick 15. I don't think they moved. He was the first defensive player drafted after 14 offensive players to start the round. That's a NFL draft record. If you put on his tape, you could probably convince yourself he's the best defensive player in the class. He just has previous injury concerns and he's a bit older, but he should provide a ton of juice to that D-line. They get Adonai Mitchell at pick 52, who we are both a fan of. I think the entire, like anybody who's a draft fan was a fan of that one. But they also get Anthony Gould, the Oregon State speedster, in I think the fifth round on day three. And I think that's going to be an interesting pick as well, because aside from Michael Pittman and Josh Downs, I wasn't a huge fan of this receiving group, but they have Alec Pierce still, and they add Mitchell and Gould. I think their receiving group is a lot better. They re-signed Jonathan Taylor, or extended Taylor, I mean, this past or two off-seasons ago, so I like that. Anthony Richardson should be healthy. They brought in Joe Flacco as a backup just in case, so they still have a competent backup. This is going to be a fun offense to watch this fall.
It's going to be electric, man. I mean, we're talking about a homegrown offensive line. And when we're talking about the superstars that they have Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor, who they've recently extended. They've drafted guys in recent drafts like Alex Pierce and Josh Downs and now Adonai Mitchell. And to me, it's like Shane Steichen is going to be able to utilize so many different sets and looks and just be able to expose defenses, especially with you consider Anthony Richardson's rushing ability. So I like how it's all coming together for the Colts offense. At this point, it's similar to what I said about Jordan Love last year. Anthony Richardson just needs to be an average quarterback in the NFL for this to be a really, really good offense. Leetu Latu pairs well with DeForest Buckner and Kwity Paye on that defensive line. And it just goes to show, and this is something that really isn't talked about in NFL communities. You'll hear guys like Howie Roseman and Eric DaCosta or some of these other GMs across the NFL that have edges or are considered really, really good. And I don't think Chris Ballard gets thrown into these conversations enough. And for a organization like the Colts under Jim Irsay, that are known to be kind of like cheaper spenders in free agency and not willing to just kind of throw the dollar around, Ballard hits it out of the park a lot of times, and he just has good process. So I wanted to bring that up before we move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars and their GM situation with Trent Baalke, which is a completely different ball game. But yeah, just how I feel about Ballard.
I remember when Ballard was about to get fired before they drafted Anthony Richardson because of all the QB misses they had. So I do not regard him as highly as you do. I think he got lucky that they were able to pick that high and get Richardson, and that Steichen worked out that well. This is coming from like the all the way back from Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan and all these QBs they had, and it just wasn't working. And they got lucky that they were able to reset it. So that's my take on him. But yeah, I equally don't like Trent Baalke either. And like in opposition to that, I guess I liked how they operated in the first round this year. They got Brian Thomas Jr. at pick 23. They moved back from 17 and still got who I believe was a consensus wide receiver 4 there at a position of need. So I really like that. The rest of their draft was kind of bad, though, in my opinion. Both of the LSU D tackles that they drafted, I thought, were very, very overdrafted. Before the draft in our mock draft episode, you had us do draft darlings and draft busts, I believe is what it was. And Mason Smith was one of my busts. I didn't understand why he was being regarded so highly as he was around the draft circuit. And to me, this is a pretty big reach there. And yeah, I'm just not a super huge fan of really any of the picks after Brian Thomas, but we'll have to see this year for them. And to me, this is a make or break year for the Jags, because you got to think two seasons removed, they have that miraculous comeback against the Chargers in the playoffs. They take Mahomes, granted Mahomes on a bum ankle, but they take him to like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter of a playoff game for them to come back. And so to hit that regression, and even to start this past year, if you remember, they were 8-3 or something at week 12. They had a 98% chance to make the playoffs. They don't make it. I think they have to bounce back this year and keep up with these ascendant teams that are around them, all that have second-year QBs. But I don't know. I like Brian Thomas. I don't know if the rest of the draft is enough for it.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to what I said. Trent Baalke is not a great GM in terms of drafting. I don't think he's good at putting a team together. It was funny. It was like he made fun of analytics prior to the draft, saying like, well, analytics says you can never trade up. And it's like, that's not what analytics says. It says that typically when you trade up, you don't win the trade. And like the facts are all there. You can pull all the receipts on every trade up that there's ever been. And a lot of times the team trading up loses the trade. Like it's not like hard math or this like really complex model that you have to be able to understand. And what's funny is he makes this comment and then trades back in the first. So he does the analytically sound thing, still grabs a phenomenal player, phenomenal prospect. I think what's interesting is the Jaguars like wide receiving core almost feels like it has a bunch of like wide receiver twos, like these 2A, 2B kind of guys. When you look at Christian Kirk, now you look at Brian Thomas, who's still kind of developing and morphing into the player he's going to be. Gabe Davis from Buffalo. They cut.
They just cut Zay Jones. Yeah.
So they cut Zay Jones. They still have Evan Engram. I was a little concerned. I like the Brian Thomas pick, but like you said, they go defensive tackle. They go some of these other positions. And in a deep, in my opinion, offensive line class, they didn't take enough stabs there. They drafted an offensive tackle out of Missouri, Javon Foster, and that was really it. They took two defensive backs, like you said, took the LSU defensive tackles, and that just it leaves something to be desired. It's they definitely were premium positions in terms of that standpoint, but I felt like their defensive line was already really set with Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker. They just brought in Eric Armstead in free agency. And again, you're supposed to draft to replace need in the future, but these weren't guys that jumped off the page as great value, like you said.
Right. And now you got to think, and this is kind of getting off the draft topic, but you got to think about a possible Trevor Lawrence extension coming up, right? Yeah. And in the back of their minds, and I think he has shown enough, but like, are they going to like trot out the supporting cast with Lawrence and be like, all right, this is it. Prove to us that you're worth it. When I don't think this is a an adequate supporting cast to go up against not only the AFC as a whole, but even the teams in their division. Like you look at Houston, really good spot. Even last year for Stroud, I think they got better with the Diggs trade. Indy definitely got better. Tennessee, for better or more or less, probably got better with the people they added. So like, I don't know. That's just it for me. That's like a lot of Trent Baalke stuff is like, I don't know. Is that going to work? Who knows?
I don't know if it will. And then you hear some of the reports this past week about Mike Caldwell not having the different like position coaches and position rooms talking to each other and being on the same page. I think Ryan Nielsen, their new defensive coordinator, asked the random kind of Jags defensive player like how many times they went over alignments, and he said 0%. So it's just some of those details fell through the cracks. You wonder if that's a concern, that if maybe they do have the talent in the building, they don't have the right coaches, and Doug Peterson does need to take back over play calling. So we'll see how all that plays out. They're in a very tough division, especially with what we talked about with the Colts. The Texans are looking like one of the better teams in the AFC. And then that leaves us with the Titans, who played spoiler to the Jaguars in the season finale, keeping them out of the playoffs. And they added a decent amount this offseason between signing Calvin Ridley, I think getting Cushenberry on their offensive line. They already added last year Peter Skoronski, and then they take J.C. Latham. Is it Latham or Latham?
Latham.
Latham. Okay, I got it right. I was like, for some reason, I was like, I know I mispronounced his name a bunch. At seven, it felt like a reach, and the difference between weighted position surplus and blind surplus for Latham was $3.7 million negative, and it was just because that was a reach, especially when Fashanu and some of the other tackle prospects that were there, Fuaga even, I think that went to New Orleans, was a better tackle prospect there. But maybe he just fits the Bill Callahan offensive line culture a little bit better there. Who knows? But overall, I think Will Levis doesn't have a lot of excuses, so to speak, anymore. And we talked about that earlier when they signed Tyler Boyd. But it's just one of those things that like this feels like it could be a good team, but there's nothing about it that screams that they're going to be transcendent.
Yeah, as far as the supporting cast is concerned for Levis, like I said earlier, I think it's okay. Like, we should be able to judge now how capable he is, but I don't think they're superstars by any means. But if there's going to be an offensive line coach that I trust to draft and develop, it's going to be Bill Callahan or the Eagles guy, Stoutland as well. But our lads is listing J.C. Latham as a left tackle. I'm not sure if that's going to play out in the league because he's only ever played right tackle in college. But even if he plays right tackle, I think it's going to work out well. Skoronski's multiple. Cushenberry is one of the better young centers in the league. I think they're taking the right steps on the offensive line to build the team around Levis. Now, I said the offensive line, and we brought up Tyler Boyd and Ridley and Hopkins earlier. They need to give everything they have in the tank this year, and I don't know how much is left, right? Because they're all older. Yeah, that's just my whole point. They're all older receivers. Now, that comes with experience, right? And so hopefully they're going to know where to be in their routes, be open for Levis to hit the easy throws. But I don't know. I would have infused some younger receiver talent into this room, especially with the early disappointment of Treylon Burks a couple years ago. I would think to add more there. But who knows? As far as the rest of their draft is concerned, Tavondre Sweat, the nose tackle from Texas, ended up not falling, and I think he's going to be a good fit next to Jeffrey Simmons. And they also got Jarvis Brownlee from Louisville, the corner. I thought that was a good pick as well. But other than that, kind of a mid-draft to me.
And it's interesting that you bring up the wide receiver core in the manner that you're talking about. And you brought up this illustration earlier, but it's like soggy fries. After you go out and you get some fast food, you've had a couple drinks, and the next morning you're a little hungover and you realize that you have some leftover fries from your food last night, and you go to warm it up because you know greasy food's going to be good. It's going to hit. And it never really does hit. And like, that's what this wide receiving core feels like. It's like, you still eat it. It still is satisfying in terms of like substance and food you need in your system. It's just, it's not as good as what it was when it was
it's
fresh.
It's the idea of it. Because even though, you know, like, and I don't want to take credit for this. I saw this on Twitter, but the analogy of it, it's like, even though, you know, it's not going to be good, when you open up that fridge and you're like, oh man, there's some cookout Cajun fries in there that I had last night in my cookout tray. That's going to be really good for breakfast. And you put it in the microwave and it's soggy and it's not good, but you're like, all right, got to eat it. That's how it feels. And shout out whoever came up with that. That was really clever. But yeah, that's just kind of how I feel about those receivers. I think they need a young star, AJ Brown. in that room, but who knows? But as far as the drafts are concerned, I think
how would you rank the wide receiver rooms in the AFC South? For me, it would be Texans, Colts, Jaguars, and then Titans, in the order that we kind of already went over the teams.
Yeah, I would go Texans number one. I think they have probably the only legitimate trio of wide receivers in the league. Then I think I would say Indy. I could, just because I think Pittman's the best remaining receiver. I'm high on Mitchell as well. Josh Downs was good for the time he did play with Richardson last year. They had a good tandem there. And then it's really tough for me because obviously the Jags add Brian Thomas Jr. They have Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk. The receivers are certainly younger with more upside, but Tennessee has more experience among their receivers. Ridley's probably the best out of all of the people we just talked about. So it's tough for me because if we recorded yesterday, I would say the Jags because they didn't have Boyd. The Titans didn't have Boyd yet, but because they added Boyd, it's kind of up in the air to me. And I don't know. Like, if Doug Peterson's calling the plays, I'll say the Jags. That's what I'll say.
Okay.
And then I'd say the Titans, just because I trust what Peterson's able to do. I'm not a big Press Taylor believer. Doug Peterson, please take back play calling. But
Don't think he's a top 10 play caller?
No, not. I don't think he's top six. I believe is what the initial reading was. But I digress. If we're looking at draft classes in this division, I think I gotta take Indy as my favorite among these four, just because I felt like theirs was more pronounced throughout, and I think they're gonna have more impact players day one than probably all these teams. Obviously, J.C. Latham's gonna be a huge impact for Tennessee, but I think Latu and Mitchell are going to be good contributors for Indianapolis pretty early in their rookie seasons. Yeah.
And edge and wide receiver, if they hit, I think they're more valuable positions than tackle. And so that's where it goes. Right. There's a swing for it. Obviously, the hit rate isn't the same. So Latham, it's like you know what you're getting with him, where the other guys, it's like if you hit on the upside of Latu Latu and Adonai Mitchell, it's insane. Like the Colts will probably be the darlings of the AFC South if those guys hit, like, day one. So we'll see how it all plays out. We have one more division to cover, and we are already over the hour point. So this is shaping up to be one of our longer episodes. And we're going to start with the Denver Broncos. So they took Bo Nix at 12, which would have been more of the talk had Michael Penix not gone at 8. But because of kind of all the wheeling and dealing that they've done to not only get Sean Payton, but Russell Wilson and all these other guys over the past couple of years, they didn't pick again until 76. But I thought what they did with pick 76 onwards in the back end of the draft was really smart. They took a lot of good players, in my opinion. It again goes back to, is Bo Nix, Jared Stidham, and Zach Wilson enough to get you an answer at quarterback? And are they able to produce kind of the equivalent worth of what Russell Wilson was on a $40 million contract last year? So if they can provide similar value to a player that costs them a lot more, Sean Payton might be able to whip up something this year and get him to 7-8 wins like he did last year.
Yeah, I like the value of Jonah Ellis on down. Like, I was a big Jonah Ellis fan. I think he'll be a good edge rusher in that rotation. Troy Franklin that late, I think, is acceptable. He obviously has issues via playing like Quentin Johnston, for lack of better words, like catching the ball away from his body, having the ball move him out of his path. Like, look at his gauntlet drill. That was like horrifying. But I think that's good value for him that late. Plus, it pairs him with Nix. And then they took your guy, Estime, later in the draft. And I think that'll be a good fit there with Javonte Williams. But they have to be happy that Penix went and took all the heat off of him, because Bo Nix at 12th overall to me is, because it's a QB, I'm not going to say it's egregious. And because they didn't sign a QB to a $100 million contract, $160 million, $100 guaranteed in the offseason, it's not as bad. But if I'm looking at a pure numbers standpoint on my board, Bo Nix was the biggest reach of the first round. He went 12th. He was 99th on my board. So 87 spot reach there. That's a lot. I like the fit between Nix and Sean Payton. Like I told you before the draft, I think he's a Sean Payton kind of player. I just thought he'd be the pick at like 40 or whatever their second round pick was.
They didn't have one, so they would have had to trade back. And that's why they were supposed to be a trade back candidate, and they didn't.
Yeah, you're right there. You're right. But yeah, it's like, I don't know if his talent is worth the 12th overall pick, but I mean, we saw six QBs go top 12, so who knows? I think it's going to be interesting, right? Because Russ was bad for them. Like, there's just no way around it. He was not very bad. He was bad for them.
And they traded multiple firsts for him. So even if Bo Nix doesn't pan out, that was one first where it was like Russell Wilson, you not only paid, but sent multiple picks to.
Yeah, they messed up that whole situation. And that's kind of the reason they had to trade for Sean Payton. Coaches didn't want to go there. So they had to trade for one. But all that's done now. Well, it will be done because next year, like the Browns, they'll have have the opportunity to have all their picks. I don't know if they'll move them or not, but all of that's done now. And now, like you said, can he get the same amount of production from a bad Russ out of Bo Nix, Zach Wilson, and Jarrett Stidham? One of those three. I would assume Bo Nix is going to be the starter just because he was a first-round pick, top 12 pick, and that was Sean Payton's guy. But, man, I don't know. And this is coming off of a summer where they traded away Jerry Jeudy. And we could say what we want about Jeudy. Looking at their depth chart, he definitely would have still been a top three receiver on their team. I just don't know. They lose their center in Cushenberry. This is like I talked about with Trent Baalke. This is another, I don't know. I don't know, Jim.
They have the one Mims. It's not
Marvin Denzel Mims.
Marvin Mims. Yeah, I was like, yeah.
And they drafted high last year as well in the second round.
They have Cortland Sutton and Troy Franklin. I like some of those pieces, but they don't have like you said, Jerry Jeudy, I think, would be better than both the two guys we mentioned in Troy Franklin and Mims.
And Mims, yeah. And they signed Josh Reynolds as well. But, I don't know. And, this is a division that we're talking about that was pretty poor last year. I think a lot of people didn't expect it to be as bad as it was. But this is still Mahomes' group. This is still Herbert's group. I don't know if they have enough gas in the tank, enough juice with Bo Nix to be able to compete with that. And so, to me, listen, they had to get a QB, right? There were a bunch of teams that needed a QB. There were six draftable ones, it seems, around the league. And they were a team that didn't miss out. We'll talk about a team that did here in probably like 10 minutes or something. But to me, it's just a lot. And it's going to have to pay off probably within the first 2 years, because otherwise – you're still sitting behind Mahomes and Justin Herbert.
You still are. Like, I don't think Bo Nix, even at like his max level of that is.
And he was in college for 5 years as a starter too. So it's kind of like Penix and Daniels. There's not a big case for the upside play with Bo Nix because he was in probably the most hand-holdy system out of all the drafted QBs in this class.
The amount of play actions, just everything kind of simplified and dumbed down. And sometimes I'm sure that plays in the Sean Payton's favor because he can tell his quarterback to do this, this, and this, and he knows Bo Nix is going to do that. So there's some value there. We'll see how it plays out this fall. I don't think it's enough to catch the Chiefs and the Chargers in terms of quarterback play. And that's really the big thing. And I thought the Chargers should have been the ones to go out and get Sean Payton last offseason. And they found out the hard way Brandon Staley wasn't the answer. And we knew this last year. And so I think that was just a miss on both their parts. And I think the Chargers would be honestly locked and loaded going into this year. And do you want to skip over the Chiefs, or we want to go to the Chiefs, or we want to go to the Chargers right now?
Let's just touch on the Chiefs briefly because I think we need to talk about Xavier Worthy, who I think is the big he's the big focal point, right? I like what they got out of Kingsley Suamataya. They traded up one spot to jump the Niners and get him, or swapped with the Niners, rather. I like Jared Wiley as a value pick on day four, but Xavier Worthy, whom they traded up for with who was it? The Bills that they traded up for. There's no way that'll bite them. That never bites the Bills. But is he going to be more of Tyreek Hill? And I know that's a bad comp. I'm just speaking in terms of their speed and stuff like that. Is he going to be more of a Tyreek Hill or a Mecole Hardman? That's where it has to work out. Obviously, Their receiving core is pretty poor. They lose some guys. Rashee Rice has legal troubles. Actually, a story came out while we were recording that he apparently assaulted a photographer at a club. So he has some more stuff going on there. I don't know what's happening there, but they need Worthy to work out year one. And I think with Mahomes at the helm, he can provide them some good juice there alongside the tackle they got from BYU, because they didn't have a left tackle before that draft pick. So I like the early stuff for KC, and KC stuff always seems to work out. They take a lot of day three people and have them be contributors. Their secondary the past couple years has been day three players, and they've won the Super Bowl with those guys. So if anybody knows how to find steals, it's the Chiefs. Is it Pohl or no?
No. It's Brett Veach.
Brett Veach. I was thinking Ryan Pace, but yeah. He knows how to find the later round steals, so I'm never going to doubt him. So I like what they did.
Yeah, I think when I see more Worthy, especially with some of the issues with his hands, with even the video that's circulated in some of these early practices, he just gives off gadgety vibes, which was a concern of mine with Worthy coming out. It kind of goes in line with they've drafted Sky Moore, they traded for Tony. Like you said, they've gone after Hardman, they have drafted Tyreek Hill. But some of these players, for the most part, outside of Hill, haven't panned out. So I'm a little bit concerned there. I would have been more excited to see a guy like Adonai Mitchell on this Chiefs team. I think he would have torn it up with Mahomes, especially with the Rashee Rice stuff going on, which, I mean, sucks for my fantasy team. He was a guy that I was looking to keep this year, and he's just dropping his stock by the day this offseason after winning the Super Bowl this past February. So overall, solid draft, but this goes then into the Chargers draft. And I really wanted them to take Neighbors, where I said I wanted to see like a guy like Mitchell with Mahomes. Seeing a guy like Neighbors with Herbert, I think would have been electrifying. I think would have been must-watch football, would have changed how defenses would have had to play them. I already thought they had a solid offensive line. Joe Alt makes it a great offensive line and definitely their strength, so to speak, to pave lanes for some of their running backs that they have on the roster. And that plays in the Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh's philosophy as a coach. So I'm curious how you think that all fits together. I did like Ladd McConkey in the second round. They took a couple flyers in Brendan Rice and Cornelius Johnson. But to me, the wide receiver room, it's not similar to the Steelers. I think it's honestly got a little bit more juice, and I think I'm boosting them because Herbert's throwing them the ball compared to Wilson or Fields. But I feel like this is one of those wide receiver cores where it's going to be towards the bottom of the league rather than like even like at middle of the pack.
What, you don't like their new free agent, DJ Chark, in their wide receiver?
I'd like Josh Palmer over DJ Chark. I'm going to be honest with you on that one.
He's not one of your favorites, no. But I think they did the right thing, partially because it's what I predicted him to do. But I think that when you look at what Harbaugh has done and bringing in Greg Roman, he wants to establish that line up front. And we look at guys that they've drafted the past couple years, Rashawn Slater, I believe it was all pro his first year. Zion Johnson was a very good guard his rookie year. Jamari Sawyer filled in for both of those guys and they were hurt. And now they have Joe Alt, who I presume will play the right side because we've seen that the past couple years. They're building a strong front for Herbert so that he can stay on the field for the whole season, which is something we've seen kind of be iffy the past couple years. He obviously missed the end of the season last year. Year before that, he had like crushed ribs or something, and Staley kept him in and was like, oh, you know Herbert, he wants to be in. But I mean, it's your job to take him out when he doesn't know like what's good for himself, I guess. I don't know. But they have a strong O-line now. I really like the Ladd addition. Now, I'm not going to say that he's a better fit for them than Neighbors, because I think Neighbors is pretty scheme agnostic. He is going to be incredibly explosive in the league, and the Giants are lucky to have them. But I think with how Greg Roman likes to do things, how Quentin Johnston and Palmer should both be boundary vertical guys, I think Ladd's going to be able to operate over the middle and underneath a lot. I think that's going to work out well for Herbert. He's a sure-handed guy who's more athletic than I guess he seems, or that his numbers say he is, like if you look at his combine. I think he's going to be a good safety valve for Herbert. And we talk about his receivers his past couple years and how Chargers fans have always wanted more receivers for him and stuff like that. The best receiver he's had has been Keenan Allen. And what Keenan Allen excels at is getting open and always catching the ball. Now, he's more of a receiver than that, but I think that's what Ladd's going to be able to do early for Herbert, is get open, intermediate and underneath, and be a sure target for him, just so we're not seeing like superhero, or not even hero ball, like third and eight, third and nine, and well, if everybody's covered, I'm just going to throw it away, or I'm going to take the 2 yard scramble. I think there's going to be opportunities every play with these receivers to make a play, especially with the additions of Rice and Johnson. Cornelius Johnson, who's a seventh round pick, by the way, is like 6'4" and he runs a 4.3. So he's going to be a burner. Like if he sees the field, he's going to be a burner. They also have Josh Palmer, who I think is a bit underrated.
He reminds me of Dorial Green Beckham in terms of just the size and speed. We'll see if he can put it together, but just like that freak coming out, that was like an undrafted seventh round kind of dude. And maybe he pans out because he is paired with such a gifted quarterback in Herbert.
Yeah. And like, I'm just saying the cupboard's not bare. Obviously you'd want more, but I think that this is a good starting, unit between McConkie, Johnston, Palmer, and I guess you can throw DJ Chark in there. Like, it's a good little group that you can build upon in future drafts, like next year. Luther Burden watch, Tet McMillan from Arizona watch, Tez Johnson from Oregon. Those are the kind of receivers that should be on Chargers fans' radars next year. But I think that getting all – now your O-line's fine, and they also have Bozeman to be center this year. Your O-line's fine. It's good. It's strong now. Now you don't need to worry about that anymore. Now you can just focus on the weapons or just focus on the defense. But I mean, they already have all that money in the defense, so just focus on the weapons for now.
I think the two comparisons that'll come out is that they could have gone the Bengals route a couple of years ago, where they take Jamar Chase over Penny Sewell. Instead, Penny Sewell falls to the Lions, and they do exactly what we see the Chargers do here: bolster that offensive line, make it a strength, make it a way to where they can pave the running game, or they can just sit back and drop back and pass. And so I think that is what they're looking towards. We just saw the Lions have an NFC championship appearance. The Bengals have been to, I think, what, two AFC championship games, a Super Bowl, those kind of things where it's like, both of those models work. And I think in Jim Harbaugh's case, this definitely matched his identity and matched the philosophy of what they're going to try to do. So I think they're the second best team in the division behind the Chiefs.
Well, which model do you think is more sustainable? Because immediately after the Chase pick, we see them reach the Super Bowl. But now Burrow's dealing with injury issues year in and year out. And that offensive line isn't as strong as it seems to be. And now that core receiver unit that they have might just be Chase a year from now. So but then the Lions are
a quarterback stat. So I think Burrow holding onto the quarterback is a lot more to do with it. I think, yes, I think the Bengals investment, though, is a factor. And then go on about the Lions.
Yeah, and the Lions, it's more of a slow build, right? They built up that offensive line diligently with all of their picks there. But now, like, we look at a team like the Lions and say, man, if they can get one more person or one more piece, they're the class of the NFC with the things they have on their roster. So I don't know which immediate.
Do you think the Lions or the Bengals are better right now? I mean, both
the Lions, absolutely the Lions.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good take. We'll talk about it more this offseason, but I think that's a good take.
Yeah, perfect takes. That's my one of my offseason takes that the Lions are better. But no, I think it's more sustainable too, because even if like Goff has played at a pretty good level the past couple of years, but you could put like a mid QB back there and they would produce fine with Ben Johnson's scheme, with that strong O-line and with guys like Amra and all their other weapons. So I think the O-line route is more sustainable, and I think it's going to pay off in the future for the Chargers more than, say, Malik Nabers would if Herbert still keeps getting his ribs cracked like in week six or whatever. But all that aside, I think we can agree that they had a pretty good draft at the top, regardless of the route that they chose. And then, the last team that we have to talk about today is the Raiders. And talk about an analytical perspective. Their first two picks were a tight end and a center, after last year taking a tight end with a top 40 pick.
Well, you had the perfect segue, my guy. Tom Telesco, the Chargers GM, is now the Las Vegas Raiders general manager. He stays in the division. They don't take a quarterback, and you're exactly right. They take two non-premium positions right out of the gate. So they took Michael Mayer in the second last year. They take Brock Bowers in the first this year. And then they double down at that non-premium position and take Jackson Powers Johnson in the second. And to me, this just goes back to, I think Antonio Pierce is just like a old school kind of football guy in terms of just philosophy. He wants to pound the rock. He wants to play defense. His defense was phenomenal down the stretch. And there were games where they had offensive explosions on the map. I mean, you go back and look at that Thursday night game against the Chargers when they hung, what was it, like 63 points on them or something stupid?
Something like that, yeah.
And it was just outrageous. And so I think Antonio Pierce believes that what they have on the defensive side is good enough, and he wants to get more in 12 personnel. He comes from the Patriots kind of background, working with Josh McDaniels, coming from that Bill Belichick philosophy of having bigger bodies, not in the essence of like a 21 personnel where you have a fullback, but you have another tight end. So having two good wide receiver options, adding more to that offensive line, it wasn't like bad. But like taking those positions where they did, that's the issue, is because you aren't going to gain as much surplus as taking maybe a Brian Thomas, because they could have taken like a Brian Thomas there at pick 13 or try to trade back. And then at that rate, you're able to move Devontae Adams off the books and maybe get a pick for him. And you get something for him rather than wasting him on his expensive contract right now. So there's a lot of different layers like that when you look at the positions taken, and it's just, it wasn't good. And Tom Telesco isn't a good general manager when it comes to drafting. He's hit on a couple guys in the first, second round, but past that, it's usually been busts.
Yeah. At that 13th spot, I wouldn't say Brian Thomas as an alternate. I would have said like one of the defensive guys, just because I think you can get away with calling Bowers or a wide receiver. He's just bigger. Like he can move like a receiver. He has all the attributes of a receiver. Certainly the best college tight end in the last couple decades. He is that guy for lack of a better term, but they also just drafted that guy like Michael Mayer last year. And so to me, I think like, yeah, they're going to be heavy 12 personnel. And then you could even call it 12 personnel, but have Bowers split out wide and stuff like that. He was able to do that at Georgia. So I like the
you have Jacoby Myers or Devontae Adams coming in. Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah.
And they just signed Michael Gallup and Michael Gallup a couple weeks ago, or a couple days ago rather. So they have like reinforcements and depth. And I like the multiplicity that they're going to be able to work with Bowers and Mayer on the field at the same time. It's just like you said, yeah, this is a team that could have gone in other directions, like could have gotten one of the corners or something at pick, I think, wasn't JPJ pick 40, I want to say. Somewhere around 44. There.
Yeah.
44. Yeah. There are a lot of other options they could have gone there, but if they want to ground and pound, if they want to be more physical up front, I like the pick there. You mentioned that they weren't one of the QB teams. To me, if this was how the draft was going to play out, and I didn't know six QBs were going to go in the first 12 picks, but it just so happens they did. Somebody was going to miss out, and it just happened to be the Raiders because they were the last pick out of that group there, and they just couldn't get a QB at that point. So I don't think we can really fault them unless they didn't want to trade up, I guess, for a QB. But even so, the only QB that was traded up for, I believe, was McCarthy, right? Everybody else just kind of fell into place. So I guess the cards just weren't in their favor for a QB there, and they're going to be going to have to look for a guy in the next draft or trade for a guy or something. But I think Minshew was serviceable enough to be able to run like a pretty, I don't want to say basic offense, but what you have with Bowers and Devontae Adams and Myers, I think you can get away with some different things. I think he's good enough to run that. We saw it last year with him with the Colts. So they're going to be an interesting team for sure. But they're, as far as their draft goes, I think from an analytical process standpoint, probably not ideal, right? But no. I think the caliber of player that they got at both of those picks, I think they can get away with taking them.
And maybe they pan out, and there's usually a higher hit rate for like interior offensive linemen. So Jackson Powers Johnson at 44 isn't what necessarily bothers me. And if Brock Bowers plays more, a slot wide receiver, plays more outside, we see some of those percentages play out as more of a wide receiver. I think there's value there, especially because his second contract would be a lot cheaper. So maybe that is what the case is. We've just seen a lot of first round picks that have had a lot of hype. Not as much hype as Bowers, or as much as Bowers should probably get based on just his profile from an athletic standpoint and the numbers. But I personally, when I look at their draft and at 112, they take Demarion Richardson out of Mississippi State, the defensive back. Spencer Rattler still on the board. Like, take a flyer. Like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not necessarily advocating for taking Michael Penix or Bo Nix in the top 15 picks. But when a quarterback is there in one of those later rounds and you're choosing between that and like a guy that is going to be fighting for a starting role, to me, it's like you should make the quarterback investment and see if it pans out. Because like O'Connell started a couple games last year. Rattler might have the opportunity. And if he could tear it up with this kind of offensive personnel, then you have a guy that you can move forward with on a super cheap rookie contract, similar to like a Brock Purdy or Dak Prescott even before that. So that's where I think they messed up. But overall, like you said, it's not the best from an analytical standpoint, but if these players hit, I think they do provide value in terms of what they're trying to do this year.
Yeah, and I think players of their talent level, their upper echelon outcomes are probably a bit more likely than, say, the average. Like Dalton Kincaid last year, even though he was like the 25th pick or something like that, I think there's a much greater chance that Bowers reaches his high percentile than a guy like Kincaid, even though they're both first rounders. But maybe they think they have something in O'Connell last year. Like you said, he started a couple of games. I believe he started the 63-point shellacking that you referred to. So I'd like to see him get the chance there, but I think Minshew is going to get that starting job early. In this group here, it's hard for me to pick a favorite just because I think each of these classes had flaws, but I think I'd have to go with the Chargers just for what they did early.
Yeah, I like that the Chiefs took three offensive linemen. I like that they took two flyers on defensive backs in day two. Those are guys that could end up being starters and players that are needle movers in the next couple of years. But for right now, I think what the Chargers did with getting Joel, the best tackle in this draft class, with getting Ladd McConkey, one of the best route runners in this class, there's a lot to like with those early day picks. And I think when you pair that with kind of a new front office, a new coaching staff, I love Joe Hortez from the Ravens. He was my top pick for a general manager. And we didn't interview him. Or if we did, it wasn't a guy that we went after a second interview with. And that upset me. So I'm with you here that the Chargers had the best draft in the AFC West. I'm with you that the Colts probably had the best in the AFC South. We both were high on New England's and then the Bengals. So pretty much a lot of accordance there. And since we're in the perfect take section, as we're wrapping up this podcast, my perfect take is that I think the best draft class this year that will pay the most dividends moving forward. And this is kind of cheating because I'm leaning on the quarterback position, but I think it's the Patriots. I think the Patriots have put their name back in the hat. They're back in the ring in terms of like fighting for the AFC East. And with Miami Dolphins, like you said, being all in, the Jets being all in, after this year, like it's going to be them and the Bills. And I really do believe that. And I loved that they knew that their strength was on the defensive side. And they threw a lot of darts on the offensive side. So if Drake May, one of the wide receivers, hits, some of those offensive line pieces are able to be day one starters, like that is going to be huge. And I think that's going to put them in a position to win maybe six or seven games this year.
Yeah, I would have to agree there. I think they're probably my favorite class out of everyone in this year's NFL draft. I'm a big Drake May believer, and like you said, their current head coach, or I guess their new head coach, was the de facto defensive coordinator for the past 5 years. So he knows how good the defense is, right? They didn't need to focus on it. They hammered the offense, and I really applaud that and appreciate that for them. My take is going to be kind of moving forward since we have the schedule release. It's expected to be sometime next week. The NFL is rather cryptic with this every year. I'm not sure why, but they make it a spectacle. So my prediction is going to be related to that. I'm going to say the Panthers week one game is going to be at home hosting the Buccaneers. It's going to be a Baker revenge game. It's going to be a Dave Canales and like the entire offensive staff revenge game or something like that. But I think that's going to be game one for us. Buccaneers at Panthers.
Buccaneers at Panthers. That'll be an interesting one. We took them down to the wire both games. Should have won the Week 17 game to kind of play spoiler, but DJ Chark fumbling at the 1 yard line, yeah. And then I think the holding or no, it was illegal formation
on the Raheem Black. He had like the craziest 30-yard touchdown run ever. Just gets called back, and then I think I missed field goal too. Like it was just that's just how the whole season went.
We left a lot of points on the board, and hopefully that'll change. We've talked about it a lot here that me personally and you a little bit aren't as high on some of the offseason moves that we've made. Hopefully we're able to kind of open week one with a dub, and it's against the division rival. And hopefully it is the Buccaneers. Like you said, there's a lot of driving storylines that would lead up to week one and get everybody hype. We would probably have the bank pretty hype week one, which is what you want to see hosting a game with a new coaching staff. It's just, you got to build off some of these games where you got to keep it close in week one, even pull off a win to keep the fans engaged, because I can't tell you how many years we've started off where it's like, oh, we have so much promise. And then by the halfway point of the year, nobody's even showing up to games. And that's just, you can't have that. You got to have home field advantage. You got to have people that are engaged with kind of the product that we're putting out on the field. And we'll see if that's the case. So you guys have any questions for us, shoot them to us at @perfect_takes. A lot of people are kind of shutting down for the off season, so to speak, giving themselves a month or two breather. And Jacob wanted to kind of do that. Myself, I said no. I told Jacob earlier the day that I think what we'll end up doing, and you'll see kind of a more detailed breakdown over the next couple of weeks, we're probably going to decide on a few positions between now and the top of July when we start the division breakdowns, and we'll go over our top 10 at that position. So we'll probably go over quarterbacks, wide receivers, pass rushers, maybe cornerbacks, some of your more splashier positions that have more headline draw. And we'll go over that. So if there are any particular positions you guys want to see us talk about, again, shoot them to us. Until next week, we'll catch you guys then.